Deciding between getting your degree or building your career? Do both at Defiance College. Earn your degree while gaining real-world experience that sets you apart with their career readiness program, Jacket Journey. Apply today at defiance.edu.
Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus, and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. Happy Monday to everybody. I hope you're having a nice time wherever you are listening, at work or at home. So as you know, I always start with a bit of a story. This was on mygreenpod.com, which is my wife and I media company that's been in the space for a long time, as you know. This is actually to do with COP16, which starts today. Now, for those of you that don't know what COP16 is, it's the Nature COP. So we all know about the Climate COP, which happens in November, but this is the Nature COP. Now, we have a feature that we put on the website yesterday. I'm going to read some of this out to you because I just think it's really interesting. It's actually, the headline is "The Planet is in Crisis," which I think we all know, and we all have a part to play. Now, this is from a charity. The charity is the International Animal Rescue, the IAR, and it's by Gavin Bruce, who's the CEO. And he is calling on everyone from global leaders to citizens everywhere to refocus and rethink as COP16 approaches. Now, I don't know about you, but I feel that the planet and nature and its biodiversity is perhaps slightly more important, or perhaps very much more important than the actual, you know, carbon emissions side of things and the climate. But, you know, that's a personal view. Today's guest is hopefully going to talk to me a lot more about the business side of things. So I'm looking forward to introducing him soon. But I'm just going to read this out to you. So COP16, from the 21st of October to the 1st of November, excuse me, will take place in Cali, Colombia. This United Nations conference represents a critical moment to halt biodiversity loss and tackle the growing climate emergency. Now, Gavin Bruce goes on to say, forests that once teemed with life are disappearing. Coral reefs, once vibrant and full of colour, are turning barren. Animals worldwide are being pushed out of their homes, and weather patterns are becoming more erratic and extreme. The consequences of climate change and biodiversity loss are devastating ecosystems across the globe, from rising sea levels to catastrophic wildfires, floods, and droughts. The changing climate is destroying habitats and putting immense pressure on species already on the brink. Now, there's been a lot of information about the decline of various different species of animals and insects and nature and trees and everything else on the planet. So there's a lot of information out there about this, but this is significant because this particular COP is where countries and nation states around the world will commit to protecting, reforesting, pulling away deforestation, et cetera, from various places around the world. So this goes on to say, COP16 allows the world to assess the progress made since the landmark Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework in 2022 and push forward with urgent action to protect the planet. The crisis is especially dire for coastal ecosystems like mangroves and coral reefs. And it says rising sea levels and ocean acidification devastate these fragile environments, while inland areas suffer from increasingly severe droughts and floods. Entire ecosystems that once supported diverse wildlife are being destroyed at an alarming rate. Now, the International Animal Rescue, the IAR, its conservation work is grounded in collaboration with local communities because it believes that protecting the planet starts with empowering the people who depend on those ecosystems. Now, just a stat, it is said that the indigenous communities around the world that are still living as indigenous actually protect roughly about 85% of the world's ecosystems. So these very important places, the Amazon, etc., are, literally cared for by those native peoples. So it says International Animal Rescue believes that with strong action, we can still turn the tide, which is great, and that together we can restore degraded landscapes, protect endangered species, and help communities adapt to the changing climate. Now, Gavin goes on to say, the future of our planet's biodiversity and life as we know it depends on the choices we make today. At COP16, we must hold leaders to their promises and think about what one thing we can do today to protect and restore our fragile ecosystems. Let's work together to give our planet and all its inhabitants a fighting chance. Let's make peace with nature. Now, I love this because I think we part of the problem, and of course, this is not just a personal opinion, this seems to be the problem, is that we have been disconnected from our kind of connection with nature. We've been disconnected from when we buy stuff, where does it come from? And nearly every single material, product, substance, business, etc., is funded through its connection with nature. Whether it's literally energy or whether it's an actual material to make something, or the list goes on and on and on. Yet we are taking and not giving back. And that's part of the problem that we're in. And what we're trying to do is continue growth, continue an economy that clearly is driving us to perhaps extinction as human beings. And so, it's an opportunity for us. And I love this thing. What one single thing can you do? What can you do to change your lives today that will make a difference, and where you can become a solution, perhaps, to the climate crisis or to biodiversity loss or to toxicity and pollution? And what can you change in your life in order to do that? Now, don't be fooled that if you make one small difference in your life, it's not going to have any effect. It will for you. If everybody did it, it would for everybody, right? But the more important thing is, if everybody did make those personal changes, and it's not our problem, we know that, but we are all part of a system that it is, we are part of the same issue. But if you do change one thing, I guarantee you, you will definitely feel better about yourself, which will then encourage you and people around you to make more positive solution-based changes. And the big one you can do is something like, make sure your pension fund is, involved in a sustainable or impact pension fund. So, go and challenge your employer or your HR department or even your CEO if you've got personal relationship. If you are the CEO, make sure that you are committed to pensions that are impactful and sustainable, should I say, for your workforce. So enough of me on my soapbox. Always like to give you a little bit of a golden nugget that you can go away and change in your lives. But of course, there's loads of other things you can do. Buy organic, buy natural products, support local communities, go out and be in nature. If you haven't got loads of money to spend, there's lots and lots of things that you can do to be a part of the solution. So check out mygreenpod.com and you can go there and find out anything you're interested in. There's, thousands and thousands of articles on subject matters that I'm sure will appeal to you. Now, on that note, I have a very interesting guest today. He's the editor-in-chief of Green, Business Green, should I say? I nearly got that the wrong way around. He's working more in the space of business, because I think that's what's really important now, is that we're noticing that governments are not really dealing with the issues as quickly as they could be. Yet businesses, there is a huge opportunity. So Business Green is the UK's leading source of information for the green economy. delivering the latest news and in-depth analysis on green business and environmental issues. So it's a bit like what we do, but we're more for the public and citizens and, you know, dare I say it, shoppers and consumers. And Business Green, who's been in the space, I think, as long as us, if not possibly longer, are catering more for the world of business. James Murray, welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jarvis. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Not at all. Thanks for listening to my rant as well. I'm sure you were kind of listening in the background, hopefully agreeing in some cases. But is there anything poignant on your mind today around COP16 and, you know, any stories that you've written about or anything that you think our listeners could do with knowing?
Yeah, we've written quite a lot about COP16 and the biodiversity COPs. And I mean, there's always with anything to do with the environment, there's sort of two sides to the story. So the deeply kind of depressing, worrying side is that it was 2 years ago that governments agreed at COP15, the previous summit, this whole new set of nature targets that need to be met by 2030. And in the 2 years since, I mean, next to nothing's happened. So some of the flagship targets are like really ambitious, like protecting 30% of land and sea, but putting them into protected status. And the actual amount that's now protected, it's gone up by just a negligible amount. And there were reports out this morning saying, you know, if we carry on at the rate we're going, we'll probably meet those targets sometime in the early part of the next century, when the target is to meet them by 2030. You know, it's the progress is that slow, and it's just, it is all, you know, it can be slightly despairing when you look at it. But then I often think the flip side of it is if we were to get to a position where governments and businesses simply do what they've said they're going to do and start to make real progress towards it, it's kind of a world historic shift they've signed up to. I mean, the overarching target that they agreed 2 years ago, and again, this didn't get much coverage, is to reverse nature loss.
Yeah.
To halt and reverse nature loss and start giving more land back to nature. Now, that would be the first time that's happened in human civilization, really. Mm. I mean, we have been expansionist in terms of our impact on nature since basically we discovered fire from day one. And we are trying to do something truly monumental and exciting and thrilling, really, and also immensely difficult, because as I said, it's never been done. We've never got close to doing it. So you kind of go back and forth between being slightly despairing looking at this stuff and then also thinking, well, actually, this is hugely, hugely exciting. We're privileged to be a part of it, and it could work. We are seeing there are pockets of progress that are being made.
Yeah, I love that positive approach, James. And, you know, quite frankly, in our business, we have to keep positive, don't we? Else we wouldn't get out of bed in the morning.
Oh, no, quite. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one of the big worries, isn't it? The sort of the climate doomism and the despairism is very easy to succumb to because it is so bleak. But equally, there are, as I say, there are those pockets of progress.
No, I love that. I love that. And I think also, James, you know, just kind of to throw this at you, because I think it's the most significant time in our history, in our lifetime, should I say, you know, when the pandemic happened, when the whole world shut down, yes, it was awful. You know, yes, there were, you know, I mean, just the people dying, the you know, the COVID, et cetera, et cetera. But looking at it from a biodiversity perspective, from nature's perspective, when we stopped putting so much pressure on nature, when we stopped living our hectic, crazy, you know, lives that, you know, economically keep the world going round, you know, nature began to restore itself really quickly, didn't it? In a matter of weeks, in terms of air pollution, water quality, you know, nature, birds, song, you know, all of these things, which I think are fundamentally important to human existence, is the whole circle of life, not to get too Lion King on you. But, you know, wasn't that true? I mean, did you feel that? What was your kind of moment of if any, awakening during that time?
I think yes and no. Again, I think in a way it wasn't massively helpful in that it sort of showed what degrowth means. And sort of when you talk about the level of kind of emissions reduction that we achieved during that period, it still didn't go down that much. And it was done by basically shutting down the entire economy and making people stay in their homes. So it wasn't, you know, this was not a positive message to align yourselves with. And I thought there was a slight concern. Some environmentalists did go a little bit like, well, this is great. And it's like, well, it's not great for most people. It's truly miserable.
No, it's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think there was that sort of things. But what it did show, or what I think actually projects like the rewilding movement show, and what I suppose the lockdown showed to a minor degree, is that exactly as you said, when you do give over space to nature, the recovery really is very fast.
Yes.
And we're seeing that now with some of these sort of pioneering rewilding projects that are, in some case, I mean, the earliest ones are sort of around a decade old now, 15 years old, and the transformation in those landscapes where charities or groups have come together to say, no, we are going to keep this space clear. And we are going to manage, you know, manage it with the lightest of possible touches to replicate natural processes as closely as possible. And they are just inspiring spaces. And there's hugely positive economic tourism, and of course, the huge environmental benefits that come with it. So that is one of the big sources of hope, is that where you can get these policies lined up together and where you can get the investment in, we are seeing shifts. I mean, at the macro scale as well. The Brazilian government, for years, you know, overseeing absolutely horrendous levels of deforestation, a change of government, and those deforestation rates have fallen really, really sharply. And there's several sort of countries with tropical forests that are now showing that they can, you know, maintain development, continue to make people wealthier, continue to tackle poverty while protecting their forests. And it's just a case of taking those best practice models and applying them everywhere, which is obviously the really difficult bit. But, you know, we are seeing more and more of these case studies that I think 10, 15 years ago, we didn't even have that. We didn't even have the sense that this could work. Now we have the evidence that it can work. It doesn't necessarily need to mean, you know, less food security or less economic growth. You can find a way to protect nature that's compatible with a modern society. And that, yeah, that's what gives me a real sense of optimism.
Yeah, no, I can hear that in your voice. Thank you. Thank you. Let's talk a bit about you. We're going to have to go to a commercial break in 2 or 3 minutes. But no, what's your background? I mean, I read that you were a technology journalist before, and you kind of moved into the sustainability space. When was that? But just tell us a bit about yourself and, you know, what your history is as a journalist and writer.
Yeah, so I've been a journalist and writer now for nearly 25 years, actually. Quite a long time. It's my first job, my only sort
Wow.
of my only kind of proper job. And I did start out as a tech journalist. I was covering the technology IT industry, and it was around sort of early 2000s, 2005, 6, when the big Silicon Valley companies were just starting to talk a bit about climate change and green data centers and e-waste, and they were just trying to get a little bit of a grip on the problem. And obviously those companies, for all their faults, they do tend to be at the cutting edge of things. They do tend to be sort of scanning the
Yeah.
horizon and looking for what's coming next. And this was around the time that it was building up to the Copenhagen summit, and there was a bit of a moment when several governments, obviously Obama came in on a climate agenda as well. You had that period, this sort of groundswell of interest and activity around the idea that, you know, this crisis is getting worse and we need a coordinated response. And I was writing about that green IT stuff, and I just looked at it and thought, well, this is A, quite interesting, much more interesting than some of the other technology stuff I was writing about. And you could see how the industry was going to have to adapt. And I just looked at it and thought, well, it's obviously not just going to be IT. You know, the automotive industry is going to have to change beyond recognition. The building industry, the whole sort of services space, the investment community, all these things are going to have to change really quite drastically. And I'm a journalist and writer, so it's like, you know, our job is to provide information to tell stories. And I thought that, you know, there's a gap in the market potentially there for a title that tries and does that and tells the story of business, of investment, but those businesses that are trying to change things for the better, and they are out there, and also tell the story of the other side, of the companies that aren't changing quickly enough and that are locked into business models that are damaging and polluting and ultimately self-defeating. It just seemed like a exciting place to tell stories from and build an audience around. And 16, 17 years later, we're kind of still still soldiering on. It
Brilliant.
doesn't, it never ends, does it? It never, it's not a story that ends, unfortunately.
No, it's not. It just gets bigger and bigger every day, doesn't it? Which I certainly I've noticed. Thanks for that. Let's cut to a commercial break. We'll be back to hear more from James shortly. Clearly, we're in conversation with a master in this space. We'll talk a bit more about that shortly. See you back in a second.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Jarvis Smith on our show, Lean Into Clean on UK Health Radio. I'm here with James Murray, who's the editor-in-chief at Business Green. Just a quick one, James. I noticed here that, although you started your journey, I think you said early 2000, by 2011, you were voted number 8 in the Press Gazette's list of the top 50 environmental journalists. I see you smiling there, which must have been quite nice, considering you hadn't been around long. And then 2020, you were named Digital Editor of the Year at the AOP. I'm not quite sure what the AOP Awards is, but clearly you're doing something right. It's nice to be commended for that.
Yeah, no, the reason I was laughing is I think they only ran that top 50 once. So I am occasionally mocked by friends that I'm number 8 still, and haven't moved in that entire period because it was never updated. But yeah, no, it's a fantastic sector to write about, and it's lovely to be recognised for the work that the team does.
Yeah,
trying to,
I agree.
Trying to keep people informed about what's going on, because it is still an underreported story.
Exactly that, exactly that. I mean, if it was, clearly, I mean, the weather is mainstream news pretty much every day. Rarely do we hear it associated, although more and more nowadays we do hear it connected to climate change, which is good. So, the narrative is changing. But as you know, it's like my wife Katie, who's editor at My Green Pod, and you, and there are a few others in the space that have been doing this a long time. Really, really knowledgeable. Now, James, tell us a little bit about Business Green, and then we'll talk a bit about this festival coming up this week, which I'm going to be involved in. But just give us an overview of Business Green. So anybody that's listening out there, what are they going to get from the site?
So we're a news and analysis website. We're a team of journalists reporting on, kind of does what it says on the tin, green businesses, the green economy. And, that's one of the challenges and one of the delights of it is we like to joke that kind of we're writing about the economy and the environment, which means we're writing about everything. And there's a degree of truth in that. It really does touch upon, virtually every industry has environmental challenges and opportunities. There's obviously the sort of core scientific underpinnings of what's happening to the environment and the climate around us. But then it does play into obviously a lot of politics and policy, which is driving a lot of the change and responding to a lot of the changes. And then you've got these big sort of investment, technological trends, consumer trends. It's all playing into that. And we're basically writing about anything that somebody working within business or work with responsibility for environmental issues, say the head of sustainability at a large corporate, or somebody working within a kind of green business, a business that's trying to tap into these green growth opportunities, would be interested in. And as I said, that runs to everything. I mean, it's about communication, it's about science, it's about technology, it's about policy, it's about risk, it's about insurance, it's about all the different industries that are all trying to respond to what we like to say is the biggest industrial revolution in human history and the fastest industrial revolution in human history. And it has to be done in about 30 years, which is a blink of an eye in infrastructure terms. It's really wide ranging. It's trying to reach quite a sort of wide ranging but senior audience of decision makers at these types of organizations and within local government and government as well. And we are, yeah, we're kept very, very busy because it is, as you said, it is much, much more central and mainstream than it was even 5-10 years ago. There has been progress, still immense challenges, but it is now If you look at the announcements that the government's made recently, one of the things they're most vocal about is what they want to do on clean energy, and nature and the environment. So it's much more politically central than it was, and much more central to the economy. So yeah, we do a lot. We write, we have subscribers. We have some of our content's free to air as well. We run the UK Green Business Awards, which recognises the businesses that are doing great work in this space. We just this year launched the Women in Green Business Awards, recognising the many women who are doing amazing work across the green economy. And as you mentioned, we have the Net Zero Festival coming up, kicking off tomorrow, for 2 days in London.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, because I'm sure there's going to be lots of people that will tune into my show are specifically interested in the aspects of sustainability. So, well, Net Zero Festival. I mean, is it the second year it's in?
It's the second year we've done it at the Business Design Centre in Islington, in central London. It's actually in its 5th year. We did
Oh,
we
is it?
had
Okay.
yeah we had the joy of launching it in the middle of COVID. So we did
Wow.
two years as a broadcast event. It was originally envisaged as an event, and then literally as we were planning it, COVID struck. So we turned it into a digital event for 2 years.
Yep.
As everyone got used to Zoom calls for the rest of their lives, and then yes, this will be our 3rd year as a physical event. We've got about 3,500 people registered, coming along. As I said, people from right across the green economy, and yeah, people are more than welcome to come join. It's free to attend, so yeah, sign up on the website. You can come and join
Well,
us.
let's get into that. Let's get into that. So look, just to recap, if you're interested in, if you're in business or you're interested in being in a more sustainable version of business, then businessgreen.com is the site you want to go to. Let's talk about the Net Zero Festival. So what it starts tomorrow. It's at the London Business Design Centre, which is in Islington. It's just across the road from the, more or less across the road from the tube station. What are people going to get? Like, it's free to come, which is brilliant, by the way, making it accessible to everybody. What can people expect?
So, I mean, there's lots of conference content. I mean, we've called it a festival, but it is a business festival. So there's not going to be sort of headlining bands and comedy
Okay. No Coldplay
throughout the
playing
entire
then,
thing.
no.
No. So yeah, you don't have to get your phones out and sort of shine lights in the air as you wave to and throw. But there is we've got a really good lineup of speakers. We've got sort of the boss of the CBI is going to be down there one day. The acting head of the Climate Change Committee. We've got some sort of political experts, policy experts, lots of heads of sustainability from top businesses offering their insights, and various workshops as well, getting into some of the detail of how you develop a net zero strategy as a business and how you start to see some of the opportunities that the transition offers. And then obviously networking, a chance to meet with a lot of like-minded people working in businesses and investment and entrepreneurs. In this space, and chance for people to come together. I mean, what the feedback we've got from so many of our readers in recent years has been, there is still obviously opposition to climate action. You still get these sort of climate denialist nonsense, but in most serious organisations, it's taken as read that we need to get to net zero as quickly as possible. And most people understand the risks of not doing so and the opportunities of doing so. So the focus is so much now on the how. It's on, okay, we want to do this. How do we do it? How do we build the business case? What technologies do we need to use? How do we need to work with people to build the skills and the understanding that get us there? What's the policy environment need to be? These are all quite complicated questions, but these are the things that need wrestling with. And so all of the kind of presentations and panel discussions and workshops are kind of built around, hopefully people go home with a sort of pad full of notes on, this is what this leading company's doing, or this is the problems they faced when they tried to do this, and maybe this is a better way, or these are the policies that are coming up over the next couple of years that you need to keep an eye out for. And just connecting people and giving them that information. That's what we're there for as journalists, basically.
Yeah, I love the aspect of the networking that you've said, because I think that's really important. Our awards that we do, the People Environment Achievement Awards, the most kind of, the essence of what you get from it as an event is the coming together of people. I think people are so busy getting on in their working lives with trying to tackle the issues that, when they come into community, it's actually quite fulfilling to know that other people are out there doing something, the same, better, different, but it's definitely a community.
Yeah.
I always bump into the same people in different shows, and it really is becoming a community of caring business and citizens that really want to make a difference. Can I ask you, James, What's net zero to you? There's a, you know, it's a little bit controversial in some places that I bring up the term net zero, but what does it mean to you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I wrote a piece a few years ago, I think when Greta Thunberg actually attacked it and sort of said net zero is not zero, and there was this sort of criticism of it. And my view of it is that I still think it's a valid term and a useful term because it's rooted in the science. It's rooted in what's in the Paris Agreement, that we need to get to a balance of anthropogenic emissions and carbon removals and sinks. And essentially what it's saying is that, you know, until we do that, until we're drawing down from the atmosphere as much greenhouse gas emissions as we're putting in, climate change will continue to get worse. So that's just a given. So that's the basic sort of scientific underpinnings of it. And getting fully to zero emissions is practically impossible. You know, there are always going to be some emissions just from the way we manage land. Obviously, you know, if the whole world went vegetarian or vegan, that would be a wonderful thing, but that's not likely to happen at the drop of a hat. So, you know, you're going to have the continuation of kind of methane emissions and the like, from agriculture, and there are other areas where just emissions are embedded in, they're going to continue. So you have to work out a way to draw those down from the atmosphere. We're seeing that develop, and we've got to get to net zero. We've got to get to zero once we've added up the emissions going up and the emissions coming down. And that, I mean, that's kind of what it means to me. It's a vision of how we stop climate change, and it's scientifically valid. It's now widely adopted by politicians and businesses. And I think starting over with a sort of what would essentially be a different form of words for the same thing, because technically that's what needs to be achieved, I'm not sure would be massively helpful. Although I know that, you know, people I respect completely disagree on that and think it's a worrying term and it gives too much space for polluters and so on. And I get those concerns, but I think that at the core of it, it's valid. It has helped focus minds. It has driven investment and technology deployment, and we need to just get on with delivering it.
Yeah, no, I thank you for that. And you know what? You've explained it really well. And I think in the business world, you do need that kind of tagline for people to get focused on. Of course, we've got the SDGs as well, and you know, there's loads of other terms that we use. But yeah, it's great. Thank you, James. I always ask my guests. I say, give us a couple of songs that are soundtracks to, you know, for want of a better word, the climate crisis or sustainability or the way you show up in the world around this issue. You've thankfully recommended two songs. Tell us about the first, well, not the tell us about it, but tell us the first song you've chosen and who it's by. We'll have a listen and then you can tell me why you chose it.
So it is, I think the first one is Liz Lawrence, All My Friends. Is that right? I can't remember the title. Now hold on, I'm gonna find it.
Yes.
The reason I can tell you the reason I chose it,
My
which might
producer's nodding, saying yes,
he
there
is
you go.
nodding along. He is nodding along. But it's quite a funny, clever, and also quite I found quite a powerful song. So and there is a reason I chose it.
Great. Okay. Well, here we go. Let's listen to this, and then James can tell me exactly why he chose this song. I hope you enjoy it. Ah, love it, love it. No, none of my friends are okay. Gosh, tell us why you chose that song.
A couple of reasons. I do really like it. I think it's both funny and sad and powerful, and it's obviously lyrically very clever. But basically, I used it as an epigraph for a slightly pretentiously for an essay I wrote last year as I was on my way to COP29, called "The Climate Theory of Everything," and it was kind of about how climate change is just underpinning all the macro trends in our lives right now, sort of politically, geopolitically, economically, but also I think a little bit kind of emotionally as well. It's there in the background of everything we're doing. I think even when people aren't aware of it, it's maybe part of the reason you do get this sense of people feeling discombobulated. And I heard that. I mean, I'd heard the song a few times, and I heard it once while I was lining up to buy a sandwich in Pret, and it was just like, oh, geez, this hits quite hard because I think for people of a certain age, I think people in you know, who have been, I think, living over the last 20 years in a sort of an economy that feels like it's struggling, just sort of bumping along the bottom a little bit.
Bundling along.
Yeah, and I think, I'm of an age where I sort of remember the 90s, and for all its faults, there was kind of there was a real sense of kind of optimism and direction. And the last 15 years haven't been like that. And I think some of those lines that she's put in there about everyone feeling a little bit in the same boat and a little bit adrift, it has been, unfortunately, the backdrop to too many of our lives in recent years. And I do think climate change and the environment and the impacts and the change that we're seeing does play into that in many regards. So yeah, I was quite proud of that essay. It was one of the few things I've written recently that I was really quite felt kind of got across what I was thinking. And yeah, it's called the climate change theory of everything, or the climate theory of everything. And yeah, so I use that in there. And well, yeah, it's a good song.
Nice. Now, where would people read that if they wanted to?
So that's the pinned tweet on I'm on Twitter, on X, and also it's on Business Green. It's on the Business Green
Brilliant.
editor's blog, The Climate Theory of Everything. And as I say, it was last year, on just ahead of COP.
Well, no, good for you. Good for you. Brilliant. Now, so I'm sure people will be interested in reading that. I was just to get back to Net Zero Festival, which is starting tomorrow. If you're in London or happen to be traveling to London or want to travel to London, I was just looking at some of the speakers that you've got. I mean, of course, there are loads, there's hundreds, but the kind of headliners, I guess, are Simon Reeve, who the TV presenter who we all love, Philippa Forrester. Again, who's also a TV presenter. I notice you've got Lucy Siegel, who's like been in the space, forever, writing about all kinds of stuff around sustainability, former Guardian and Observer writer. Anybody that you're particularly interested or looking forward to either talking to or listening to? Because I know you're involved, James. You do some of the interviews. You're going to be talking to me on stage on
Yeah, well,
Wednesday.
obviously you're good self, Jarvis. I'm
Oh,
looking
well,
forward to our chat.
thank you for that. I wasn't fishing for that, but I appreciate it.
No, we've got some really good people. So Camilla Bourne, who was involved with the negotiations at COP26, as a diplomat, she's going to be talking about the upcoming COP29 summit, and she's always fascinating. I'm really looking forward to talking to he's not a household name, but Timo Bolt is the founder of Gusto.
Oh, I love
The
Timo. Brilliant.
yeah, and it's such a fascinating business model, hugely successful, and really interesting kind of environmental story there about how they're trying to build a kind of from the ground up a business that is ultra sustainable and low impact. And it's about those kind of disruptive business models that change things. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him. And who else are we hearing from? Ray Newton-Smith, the leader of the boss of the CBI. Again, she's been such a sort of powerful advocate for net zero, on behalf of really big businesses, and I think she's a fascinating speaker. And last but not least, I'm really looking forward to talking to Robert Saunders, the historian. He's a political historian of modern British history, and him and me are going to be on stage for 20, 25 minutes talking about Margaret Thatcher, of all things.
Oh,
Which
wow.
promises to, and yeah, I had a call with him last week. It promises to be absolutely fascinating. He's a really, really, really smart guy. He's written some brilliant books, but we're going to be talking about Margaret Thatcher and environmentalism.
Very good. Well, gosh, let's get more into that in a minute. We're going to have to cut to commercial break, James, but I think our listeners will be definitely interested into some of the subject matters you're going to be dancing around with that talk. See you back here in a second.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Lean Into Clean, Jarvis Smith on UK Health Radio. I'm here with James Murray, the editor-in-chief from Business Green. We're actually just getting into the festival that's happening tomorrow. It's a business festival. It's the Net Zero Festival. James is just telling us about one of his conversations he's looking forward to tomorrow with historian, and I've forgotten his name, but forgive me, James will remind us, but they're going to be talking about Thatcherism. Give us a little taster, James, of what you're going to be talking about, because clearly there's some moments in Thatcherism that was definitely linked to today's issues around the climate crisis, right? But also some positive stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Robert Saunders, who's a
Robert Saunders, thank you.
his historian of sort of modern British politics, and I think his hypothesis is obviously, she's a figure of massive contradictions, and has been idolized by the right as sort of almost like climate denialist sort of beacon of freedom, which she did become a bit more skeptical about climate action later in life. But when she was in office, she was actually one of the world leaders that was pushing hardest for real, stronger environmental action on the international stage and coordinated action. And there was this moment where the stars aligned around the late 80s, early 90s, when you did have a kind of global concerted push that tackled CFCs and the hole in the ozone layer, that kind of got a bit of a grip on the acid rain crisis that was causing so much problems, and then laid the foundations for the Rio Earth Summit in around 1990, that then gave us the kind of the UN negotiations on biodiversity and climate change that we've just been talking about, and had that kind of it was this founding moment, and her and actually again George Bush senior in the US, now they're seen as these sort of very, very right-wing figures, but actually were much more sort of scientifically literate and progressive on this stuff, and recognized the need for, obviously they wanted market-driven responses. They wanted the problem solved through innovation, but they didn't deny the problem, and they were very, very serious about the need to get a grip on these issues. And Thatcher gave some very famous speeches where she talked about, the small c conservative ideals of looking after your neighborhood, your planet, and the things that sustain life. And she was obviously a scientist by training as well. So there was, it's become much more toxic than it now than it was then, the sort of the polarization of the politics of the environment and climate change. And there was this moment when maybe we could have really turbocharged progress, and then unfortunately it sort of fell away for a few decades. But we're going to look into that and try and learn some of the lessons from then of how maybe now we can rebuild some of the sort of cross-party consensus on this matter, and replicate the success that was had during that period on CFCs and some of the other environmental problems that we were seeing then.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. That sounds fascinating. And you're absolutely right. We did solve the issue around the ozone layer. It was an issue and it got fixed because of the action that was taken. So great stuff. I think there's a lot to learn actually from that. So I'm very much looking forward to that. So James, let's talk a little bit more about politics, because clearly you've got, we've just got a new government in. I mean, part of the issues when it comes to sustainability, the economy, the politics, and the business, part of it is legislation. I mean, how much, how confident are you in the current government? I'm sure you have to be apolitical as a as an editor, but as an individual, have you got a kind of heartfelt response to the changes and the noise that is being made?
So the challenge with writing about the environment is always that it's the two it's the it's a both side story. You're always looking at two sides of the coin and trying to work out the balance between the two. The fact is, the new government is, without a shadow of a doubt, the most ambitious on climate action and the environment that the UK's ever had. It's arguably the most ambitious globally in terms of having its a decarbonisation targets and agenda and program. The UK's actually kind of led the world in terms of the pace of its decarbonisation over the last 15, 20 years. The last government, of which I was highly critical on many fronts, did actually have quite a good story to tell on how quickly it was rolling out renewables and phasing out coal and bringing down our emissions. And the new Labour government is really, really committed to building on that and to accelerating it at a rapid rate of knots. They have hugely ambitious targets, particularly on decarbonising the power system by 2030, which, is 6 years away, which is just such a short period of time in terms of infrastructure development. And quite radical plans on kind of planning reform and grid reform and other things that will allow us to get there. So there are considerable reasons for optimism. The flip side of that is, it's okay to have targets. Are they actually going to be able to do it? Are they going to have the political nerve to push back against kind of NIMBY protesters when they try and put up pylons and wind farms and solar farms? Do they have the, are they going to be able to, sort out the economic stagnation that we've had for the last decade and deliver the kind of funding that's needed? Are they going to be willing to borrow to invest? Or are they just going to get blown off course by events, and the very, very tight sort of fiscal envelope that they've provided themselves? So there's real reasons for optimism if they can do what they say they're going to do, and huge reasons for concern if you have skepticism that they're able to do that. So you can kind of pick your side. I mean, I'm broadly optimistic. I think it's a change was needed. I think the last government had become, had stagnated and had started to sort of flirt with the idea that net zero was part of the reason the economy wasn't growing as fast as they wanted, which is just, I think, a deeply sort of reckless and poor analysis. And I do think we are going to see really real meaningful progress in the coming years. The thing that's unclear is it going to be fast enough? And is it going to extend beyond decarbonizing the power sector? Are they going to start to wrestle with issues like, the efficiency of our home? Are they going to start to fund more nature protection or protect more areas for nature? Are they going to start to provide a sort of decent public transport system, which at the moment the UK categorically does not have? The scale of the challenge is very daunting. So you can, depends what side of bed you get out on, to be honest.
No, I think that's brilliant. I love the way you've answered that, actually. Very honest. I think I agree with you. It's a monumental task. It needs a holistic approach. Yes, of course, energy is a massive one, but they do need to be the other kind of pillars of society underwritten with sustainability as well. Let's go to your second song, James. Unfortunately, we are coming very close to the end of the show. I mean, the time just flies. Luckily, I get a chance to speak with you again on Wednesday at the Net Zero Festival. But tell us about your second song. I think it would be great if you tell us what you've chosen, why you've chosen it, and then you can say goodbye. We'll love you and leave you. We'll play out the song, and then it'll be the end of the show. So tell us why you've who you've chosen and why you've chosen it.
So this was I was struggling for thoughts on this, trying to get a song that you think about climate change that isn't the end of the world that we know by as we know it by REM is rather tricky, I found. But I used it again as an epigraph for that same essay, and it's Lana Del Rey's song Blue Bannisters, and it's for the line in it, "I'm scared of the Santa Clarita fires. I wish that it would rain." And again, it's that same sense of the way the climate crisis and this feeling of disconnection from nature is just weaving its way into our lives now. And I mean, I do love her music. I think she's a phenomenal and interesting artist. And that I think that song is yeah, it's a beautiful song. But that it's just for that one line, that sort of this side reference to the climate crisis that is now the backdrop of all of our lives and will be for the coming decades.
James, that's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me on today's show. It's been a great pleasure to have you. Clearly, you're a very knowledgeable guy. I mean, the green economy, you're an expert in that field, one of the country's leading experts, editor of, Business Green, and running the awards and the Net Zero Festival. You're doing a lot, and we absolutely commend you and respect and appreciate you and your team for everything you're doing to create a better world for now and for our future generations. James, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Jarvis. That's very kind of you to say. Thank you.
Not at all. And this is Lana Del Rey, Blue Bannisters. Welcome back. We are now at the end of our show. We're coming to the close to the hour. Just a bit of reflection. I mean, firstly, beautiful song. Great to have James, such a knowledgeable, climate kind of, activist in many ways. He's writing about this stuff every day. If you do want to get more clued up and you're in business, get to the Net Zero Festival. Check out, Business Green if you're really connected in there. And also, mygreenpod.com is the place where you can get all the information that you need to live a greener lifestyle. Thank you very much. It's been great talking to you all this week, and I look forward to hanging out with you again next week. Have a super, super week.